Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the business of bourses, all the news that's fit to pith in a podcast. It's the Exchange Invest Weekly with me, Patrick L. Young. Leading the news in the bourse business this week, it was obviously all about Hong Kong exchanges and London Stock Exchange Group. That potential bid which was being rebuffed just as we were recording the previous episode of this weekly review. The London Stock Exchange, they've rejected the Hong Kong's $39 billion takeover, albeit it's quite interesting. I mean, you take some of the analysis by the likes of Berenberg, they're talking about £82 per share being essentially a fully valued integrated Refinitiv, in parentheses. Anybody who can fully integrate Refinitiv is a better man than me, I suspect, and indeed a better man than several generations of management at Reuters, Thomson Reuters and Refinitiv, all of whom have failed at this task. And the London Stock Exchange, it has to be said, aren't even very good at actually integrating their purchases. Nevertheless, at $39 billion, we were talking about something like £82. Berenberg values at £83. What's the difference, ladies and gentlemen? I suppose it's going to be the element of cash. That's presumably why we've got the Hong Kong exchanges making a lot of moves around London at the moment. They're going to visit all of the different investors they can possibly see. And while we have had one or two investors suddenly come out and slam the deal instantaneously, in parentheses, would you trust a man with your due diligence who actually tells you that a deal is rubbish before he's even talked to the person making the bid? I don't think so. At the same time, much is going on beneath the scenes. I laid out a lot of the political and indeed the basis of the deal in a post for CapEx, that's the Centre of Policy Studies website, last Monday. Blocking Hong Kong's bid for LSE would be a disaster, I said, and I still fully stand by that opinion. Indeed, the Hong Kong Exchange may yet be forced to go hostile. And indeed, in terms of going hostile, it's actually fair to say that the people who went hostile first were the London Stock Exchange board themselves. In a very measured statement last weekend, the Board of Hong Kong Exchanges had hoped to enter into a constructive dialogue with the Board of LSE to discuss in detail the merits of its proposal and are disappointed that LSE has declined to properly engage. That was in response to something that seemed like, well, frankly, it wasn't quite that scene in Downfall where the Hitler character starts stabbing the map and blaming all and sundry. But nonetheless, the London Stock Exchange did absolutely nothing to demonstrate their gravitas or their history through what was actually a rather snarky, sniping, aloof, arrogant and unreasonable statement. Amongst the many things they said, the chairman, Don Robert, in his letter, stated there was no strategic merit. Really? Frankly, for someone who's only been in the job a few months, it would be fair to say that might be a neophyte's view of the stock exchange business, but clearly doesn't demonstrate a great understanding of actually the bourse parish and the many dynamics that are undergoing it. The concept that the deal would be a significant backward step, as the LSE also asserted, was just unnecessary language from LSE. It was a sharp and unjustified rebuke which did not become a regulated entity, let alone a very large multinational regulated entity with a history like the London Stock Exchange. I suppose most worrying of all is this inference that perhaps it suggests that Chairman Don Robert, newly in the position of the LSE chairman, really doesn't know what the LSE actually does, really doesn't understand the position of a regulatory business with the august standing of the LSE through history, or arguably worse still, it's an intention to advance his career and perhaps indeed the career of others in the C-suite at the expense of shareholder value. In all those instances, this was not a good week for the London Stock Exchange, despite what was being said by them throughout the course of the week. And indeed, given the fact that they have given so much time to talking about this deal while refusing to talk to Hong Kong exchanges, seems to me, well, I would regard that as being a slightly funny optic, wouldn't you? Surely the best thing to do would be to actually investigate the deal a little bit further before coming to judgment, rather than simply turning round and trying to dismiss everything with a very, very haughty and indeed, frankly, nasty and unnecessarily nasty and aggressive letter. Thus, we look at the LSE Hong Kong bid as follows from the LSE. Well, whether it was the scathing letter was simply the standard operating hubris of a one-time monopolist, which still harks back to a simpler era of demutualised national solitude, one which has long since gone, it was interesting to see how LSE were simply so aggressive in their approach, where if really they had had, frankly, a position of strength and a more diplomatic approach, that would have coherently inferred a great deal more maturity and a great deal more gravitas upon the management than was demonstrated. Even the South China Morning Post's columnists were quick to point out that the London Stock Exchange was wrong to flatly reject Hong Kong's $36.6 billion offer. At the same time, the charm offensive is now on, given the fact that something like 15 of the top 20 shareholders in London Stock Exchange Group also happen to hold Hong Kong Exchange's group. That could make for a very interesting denouement as we head towards the 9th of October, which is the deadline for a bid proper. Over in Italy, the government has made a few comments. In parentheses, it's difficult to know who the government of Italy is. The people actually want to elect, they're actually in opposition. The people who are being chaperoned and marshalled around in government are run by a technocrat who's effectively the man that Europe prefers. Anyway, in any case and point, we did have some comments from a minister. The point was that the Milan Bourse is strategic to Italy due to the MTS bond trading platform. A very good point, and indeed, no one, I think, in Hong Kong or elsewhere is thinking about rolling up MTS Italy and taking it elsewhere. Moreover, given the fact that the Italian government has an unbelievable appetite for bonds, and given the fact that the Chinese have a huge number of people who are always looking for a juicy yield, there could be some mileage yet in the Milan Bourse being part of a Hong Kong Exchange London Stock Exchange tie-up, not just because of, say, the luxury share products and things like that, which I was discussing in the CapEx article. In the midst of it all, we had a very, very exciting and interesting remark. The London Stock Exchange may be leaving the city. It may depart Paternoster Square in an effort to slightly reduce its overheads and go to hipster Hackney instead. How interesting. At the same time, I think that would be the first thing that the London Stock Exchange have done in 120 or 130 years that might actually fill, say, the likes of Charles Dickens, the former Stock Exchange clerk, full of horror at the idea they would be leaving the city of London and going to what was much more of a working man's clime. Elsewhere, it was good to see a sensible and measured view from the Times of London newspaper. Their view on the bidding for the London Stock Exchange, fair dealing. The government should not interfere in the hostile bid from Hong Kong, they noted. And quite right too. Thus, as I mentioned, Berenberg happened to be reckoning the fact that the LSE might be worth £83 with a functional Refinitiv deal. Brackets again, a functional Refinitiv deal with a proper integration is... well, it's pretty much on the same scale as meeting Santa Claus and Elvis on the same afternoon at this juncture, given what has gone on in the past. And that's going to be at least, anyway, 2 to 3 years from even completion of the deal, and then 5 years away from any form of integration that's remotely coherent. Now, that will prove ultimately to be an integration beyond the LSE's proven limited capability in this respect. With the Hong Kong exchanges already offering the equivalent of 82, it's absolutely obvious there is a deal in here. We're just haggling on price and structural issues. Shareholders, provided HKEX gets both the deal and the messaging right, stand to benefit from a restructured bird in the hand, which will be above the level of their enormously risky Refinitiv call option value addition, which is dependent upon the successful integration that generations of management, we're talking going back 30 plus years, have been unable to deliver to the Reuters, the Thomson Reuters, and indeed subsequently rebranded as Refinitiv behemoth. Thus endeth the discussion of Hong Kong Exchanges and London Stock Exchange for this week. But of course, if you want more, don't forget to pop back to what I was saying last week. However, as a final footnote, London Stock Exchange's CEO David Schwimmer says he feels very good about a Refinitiv deal, according to Reuters. He noted that the two big drivers of change going forward are the increasing importance of data and multi-asset class investment strategies. So therefore, he's being offered the one mega possibility that is feasible without antitrust intervention to create the ultimate trans-Pacific multi-asset class board. And yet the LSE management are sticking with buying the irreconcilables of Refinitiv, despite not having much ability to integrate a decade and more of their purchases over the course of the previous management. That strikes me as, well, frankly, somewhat bizarre. At the same time, with the addition of a few JP Morgan bankers to avoid the Hong Kong Exchange hostile takeover, it would seem that the LSEG have pretty much every bank known to man or beast apart from Moelis, who represent the Hong Kong Exchanges in their bid. One good thing that actually was a piece of fair analysis to come out of David Schwimmer's remarks in the course of the last few days, he pointed out the fact that he expects the European Union to extend equivalence for euro clearing beyond March 2020. That's entirely a fair analysis and entirely logical. On the other hand, of course, logic is not something that the European Union essentially majors in doing well. And given the many green policies the European Union are eager to throw around us to turn back the clock, perhaps the idea of cutting European Union banks and corporates out of global markets would be a great way for Brussels to turn a lot of Europe back to swamp and forest, thus, of course, neatly reducing the carbon footprint of the EU27. Who knows? We'll get back to clearing, we'll get back to regulation in just a moment. But for now, let's move forward to looking at the week's one set of results, Aquis Exchange. Because don't forget, I mean, there are four London stock exchanges listed at the moment. The London Stock Exchange is only one of many amongst the stock exchanges of the UK's thriving financial centre, the largest international financial centre in existence. It was great to see Aquis progressing with aplomb. Of course, recently they bought Nex, which actually delivers them this full exchanges licence. Revenues jumped 165%. They have the Nex purchase coming on stream next year. That'll probably still be losing them some money when they take over what has been an SME-based market for quite some time, originally called Plus. But nonetheless, the advantage of the full exchange license, the fact that they're prepared for Brexit-led share trading and those shares which will move away from London with their Paris arm, and also they're giving us a target of profitability next year with an existing market share in London of circa 4.8%. Fabulous news altogether, great stuff from Alistair Haynes and his team, and I continue to wish Aquis every success in the future. Our third story today, we're looking at the BIS, the Bank for International Settlements. Not a lot was talked about this week, not a great deal of time for analysis given to the Hong Kong Exchange's deal, etc. But they produced their triennial bank survey. That's the central bank survey of foreign exchange and over-the-counter derivatives markets. It's taking place every 3 years, and this gives us a fantastic picture of what's gone on, essentially all the way from the run-up and then actually itself the Brexit vote of 2016 and how that's impacted world financial markets. Fascinating to see. Tearing apart some of the numbers, two instant takeaways that I really thought were very, very interesting. The first is the United Kingdom is still absolutely dominant in Forex. Moreover, remember something I was talking about last week. For all those who are talking about this Hong Kong Exchanges deal and how could it possibly mean anything to the City of London, etc., remember that for the course of the last year or so, it has been quite frequently the case that there has been more volume in Chinese renminbi, Chinese yuan, versus US dollar forex trading in London than there has been in the massive pairing of the US dollar euro in London. Now, given the fact that what we know from the BIS settlement and the BIS statistics is that London is still the singularly dominant forex centre for trading on earth. Take that away and think about that in the context of Hong Kong Exchange's London Stock Exchange and the many other ways that, of course, that deal could allow the City of London to profit. The second thing which is really, really key and actually washes away any known nonsense about the idea that the City of London is somehow or other struggling is look at interest rate derivatives. Not only has London got a significant position, it has actually increased its dominance, its leadership in interest rate markets across the world during the course of the time since the build-up to the Brexit vote on June the 23rd, 2016, but actually also ever since, during the course of time when the world's media, when the international banks themselves, when Christine Lagarde, when Mark Carney have been so keen to tell us that this is the end of the world, the end of the UK, the end of the British financial centre. Hey presto, the three-dimensional traders of the world, the derivatives dudes, they're not buying it. London is more dominant than ever in interest rate markets. Hashtag despite Brexit. When it comes to looking at new market deals, deals talk this week, there was a good article in Reuters at the end of the week. It was talking about US stock exchange competition and how that stock exchange competition is going to heat up in 2020, because we have already lined up three new entrants as full-on stock exchanges. The LTSE, the long-term stock exchange, founded by Eric Ries, coming out of Silicon Valley, which is aiming to be much, much, much longer term than the existing quarter-by-quarter and indeed microsecond-by-microsecond dudes of the prevailing stock exchange microsystem. There's going to be MEMEX, the Members Exchange, which is coming out, which is yet another attempt by the amalgamated buy and sell side to try and do better, the thing that exchange groups have tended to actually do better by themselves. And then we're also going to see the Miami International Exchanges Group, that's Miami Holdings Group, whatever they're exactly called, I honestly can't remember. They run the Miami Stock Exchange, even though, as far as I can remember, it's actually nowhere near Miami. But nonetheless, the Miami Group are going to have their own stock exchange too, which will relate to their options market et al. Little bit of property news. We got some confirmation from the CBOE, a move that we previously mentioned about 100 or so issues ago in Exchange Invest on the 5th of August. They are going to be moving offices to the old main post office of Chicago. Nonetheless, they're going to build, would you believe it, a new open outcry trading floor. Yeah, they're going to build a new open outcry trading floor. They're going to build it at 141 West Jackson, so that's obvious. That's the old HQ of CBOT, which makes a lot of sense because they've got a lot of sort of very floor-friendly kinds of spaces in that sense. But then again, the whole idea just strikes me as scintillatingly pointless. The other major leaders in the market space don't have exchange floors, don't need exchange floors, don't want exchange floors, and indeed all of the other upstart exchanges that have come along ever since the International Securities Exchange, ISE, revolutionized the business and went electronic at the turn of the millennium, nobody saw the point in exchanges, apart from some, well, people who happen to have spent their lifetime working for businesses like CBOE.
Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly. We welcome your feedback. You can contact me directly, patrick@derivativesvision.com, with any comments. Meanwhile, if you enjoyed this show, we would welcome you giving us a thumbs up. Or, if you have time, a positive review will always be welcome, wherever you find this podcast.
The Cum-Ex scandal continues to bubble along. Incredible headline in Bloomberg earlier in the week. Bankers or mobsters becomes the question in the German Cum-Ex tax probe. Germany's biggest tax scandal has landed the masters of the financial universe with an unflattering label: criminal organizations. As I noted in Exchange Invest at the time, number one, prosecutors appear correct. Number two, why is anybody surprised? Speaking of trust, very interesting events, very sad events really, happening around Sandton in South Africa. As you'll remember, Sandton is a suburb of Johannesburg, and it's not only a very nice, elegant bourgeois place, but it also happens to house these days the headquarters of the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Hashtag Sandton Shutdown. Hundreds of people began gathering at Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Those sexual violence protesters targeted standing outside the stock exchange, not because they saw the stock exchange as actually guilty itself. How could they? After all, the preeminent stock exchange of South Africa actually happens to have a chairman who is female and currently is in the process of exchanging its female CEO for another female CEO, both with redoubtable talents for the top job. No, rather, the Johannesburg Stock Exchange is now seen as a totem of fairness in society. Now, I don't recall in my history books anybody saying l'état c'est la bourse in French, but many kings said that the state was obviously them. Johannesburg Stock Exchange is showing that it has successfully steered a path of trust in South African society, while tragically so much else has fallen apart and the institutions of government, the general institutions of the state, are no longer trusted. But the bourse remains an epicentre where people believe there is some element of honesty. That's a great tribute to the JSE and its long-standing management. It's a tragic indictment of South Africa. Still on the topic of trust, well, gosh, there was a great speech this week. There was an invitation to go to London on behalf of Commissioner Stump, and what a fantastic, well, Stump speech, sorry, she gave. She essentially called, quite rightly, on the European Union to have more trust. The European Union should provide clarity on when it will intervene in a foreign clearinghouse for derivatives to avoid potentially impeding cross-border coordination among supervisors, noted Commissioner Stump of the CFTC. This is not good. This is not good in any sense. In essence, trust has broken down between the European Union and the UK-USA. That's not a good look when the latter two, the UK and the USA, are the big free markets of the moment, and Europe isn't. It's a sad position to see, and indeed, true, the Gensler era did not help much from the CFTC's department specifically, nor did really the Obama era as they were trying to clear up the mess of the 2008 financial crisis. But right now, the European Union is irate and obsessed like a spurned spouse at the UK for Brexit. And that makes for very, very messy policy overall. Look, maybe the UK is stupid to pursue Brexit, but the die is cast, and the European Union needs to behave like a much more mature and much less imperial regulatory system, which does not have the right to overreach right across the world.
DLT Malta is the book of the blockchain island, consisting of thoughts from leading local advocates and practitioners of the crypto economy, led by the Prime Minister, the Honourable Joseph Muscat MP. DLT Malta is edited by myself, Patrick L. Young, and Joseph Anthony de Bono. The book can be obtained from all leading bookstores worldwide. If you want to understand Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrency, and the broader impact of the distributed ledger, this book is packed with insights and information about the potential for the technology. DLT Malta, Thoughts from the Blockchain Island, is published by DV Books on behalf of the industry association Blockchain Malta, in bookstores now. In People News, John Cryan, the former Deutsche Bank CEO, is going to be chairing the hedge fund group Man from January. Meanwhile, the European banking lobby, as if they couldn't do badly enough with Cum-Ex, managed to self-inflict a large amount of egg over their faces with their hiring practice for the new CEO of AFME. Okay, as we know from the recent disclosures of the salary of the CEO of AFME, it's a prime position that no one would want to turn down, and they've employed a very, very capable candidate, Adam Farkas from Hungary, who, well, this is the problem, isn't it? He's the chief executive of the European Banking Authority, the banking regulator for Europe. Now, I get it. Nobody at the EBA actually wanted to move from London to Paris when they were offered the choice because of Brexit and because the regulator therefore couldn't stay in the UK any longer. However, while it's clear that Farkas is demonstrating the robustness of London as a financial centre, as a place to live and work, and indeed as all round a great cosmopolitan megacity, the great cosmopolitan megacity of Europe, well, it's tricky, isn't it? How can you possibly manage to have such an instant revolving door policy where you can walk out of being CEO of the European Banking Regulator and within a matter of months of gardening leave turn up in London as the head of the investment bank's lobby group? It's really a rare day when I find myself in some form of agreement with the anti-market, anti-capitalist, green socialist, extremist MEP Sven Giegold, amongst others, but their revolving door concerns are absolutely fair. Back directly in the Exchange Parish. Well, my best wishes to Ivan Takev, who has been serving indefatigably as the CEO of the Bulgarian Stock Exchange for many years. And he's interestingly going to be replaced by Manu Moravenov. Manu was actually one of the earliest employees of the Bulgarian Stock Exchange, who's returning and replacing Ivan, who he had actually hired many years earlier. I applaud the excellent work by Ivan, and I wish him every success in the future. He has often been a breath of fresh air in the SEE region, and he has helped stabilise and grow the Sofia Exchange. Good luck, Ivan. Over at Deutsche Börse, member of the executive board, Hauke Stars, is not going to renew her contract for a third term of office. That's doubtless going to get the Eschborn Kremlinologists looking to see who else is going. Presumably, imminently, we're going to be getting rid of quite a large number of the previous C-suite, certainly those people who were, well, quite reasonably ought to be tarnished with the brush of failure for the stupidity of the Deutsche Börse LSE merger of equal desperation attempt. Also leaving is Michael Zollweg, who's had 20 years experience in surveillance. Good luck to both of them. Christopher Giancarlo in the USA added another appointment to his post-CFTC CV this week after being announced as a board member of the American Financial Exchange, that's the Doc Sander Ameribor Exchange. Christopher Giancarlo will also be joining the Chamber of Digital Commerce's Board of Advisors. Finally, in Career Pass this week, congratulations to Victoria Meller, the Chief Marketing Officer of Nex. She's not staying any longer with the CME-owned Nex Group, but is in fact moving on to, well, the interesting channel of Refinitiv. I wonder what brand she'll have to deal with by next year. In technology news, this was the week where the Korean exchange went paperless for its trading and settlement. Japan's first electricity futures, how much of a shake-up they will, well, spark, is going to be something to look at, but they launched successfully during the course of this week on Tocom. Over in Poland, the Warsaw Stock Exchange have issued what strikes me as just simply one of the worst ideas I have ever heard. They've got some sort of a launch of a program for encouraging individual investors called Energy in Action, which is related to the national monopoly which is listed on the Warsaw Stock Exchange, Energa. Energa is the sort of bloated, incompetent, customer-oblivious monopoly which brings markets into disrepute. There is nothing to recommend their business operations in my painful experience of using them. The Warsaw Stock Exchange is demonstrating a woeful lack of common sense in bringing in such a company to any form of Warsaw Stock Exchange sanctions scheme. Frankly, it's a farce and not something that investors, private investors, should allow their due diligence to include. So, ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of another incredible week for Exchange Invest. It's been a big week for big volumes. Indeed, if we delve into volume, it would take a lot of space for every last announcement, thus we don't do it in the Exchange Invest newsletter and this podcast. But at the same time, we had a perfect storm at the start of last week, the Saudi oil pipelines being attacked,
Brexit uncertainty reaching a crescendo, and the Eurozone diverging off into a whole new realm of desperation, I mean quantitative easing, following a US rate cut, made for some spectacular numbers this week. The Internet Continental Exchange was in the forefront of these sorts of things. In fact, I think they traded as much Brent crude in a day last Monday as they used to trade in a year at the old International Petroleum Exchange during the late 1980s and early 1990s. There were records for Richard Sandor's American Financial Exchange for the Ameribor product, and CME indeed managed records for their SOFR futures trading volume and open interest too. Does this mean the stir beast is awaking, ladies and gentlemen? It's very interesting to see because, well, the actual now near mythical conventional concept of a yield curve is less frequently cited beast than many rare Pokemon. At the same time, while that was a cause for optimism, there are of course negative things in the air. The WeWork, was it a cloud sort of toppy IPO? Looks as if it could be the top of the bull market to many. Cum-Ex is a shambles and something which is going to rightly bring a great deal of opprobrium upon the banks for a foreseeable period to come. At the same time, there are risks to Brexit. There are risks via the UK Supreme Court's decision on what was actually, to most people's minds, a perfectly reasonable prorogation of Parliament. But of course, the campaign to try and stop the will of the people, the campaign to try and stop Brexit, carries on afoot. Meanwhile, of course, there are a series of issues in relation to the ECB itself, as I mentioned earlier. There was an excellent article, if you're interested in the macroeconomics of it all, by Hans-Werner Sinn, very, very noted and esteemed German economist, which is well worth reading. As he noted, Europe therefore has a choice. It can continue to allow the ECB Governing Council to pursue its own implicit exchange rate policy, or it can decide that the looming trade conflict with the US belongs in the hands of democratically controlled institutions. The central banks are out of their league on this one. Coming from an august name like Mr. Sinn, that sounds pretty scary to me. So, it's going to be another exciting week in markets ahead, whether it's to the bull side or the bear side. At least the one thing is that we do believe the parish will be operating as normally, hopefully without any technological or other kerfuffles. Interesting to see how Hong Kong Exchange's LSE develops. And finally, a story completely off the beaten track. The Malta Classic has launched their 2019 events at a press conference last week. The event will take place on the 12th and the 13th of October with the Mdina Grand Prix as the highlight after a day at the concourse on the Friday before, the 11th in the historic city of Mdina itself, the ancient capital of Malta. And the day before that, on the Thursday, there will be the hill climb at Mtaleb. Over the course of the weekend of the Mdina Grand Prix, the commentator is going to be none other than yours truly. If you want to hear me talking about something other than the world of the week of exchanges in review, then I'll be happy to welcome you on the 12th and 13th of October in Mdina, Malta. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Patrick Young. Thanks for joining the Exchange Invest Weekly. I hope you have a great week in markets. This show relates to the business of bourses. It is not to be construed as investment advice, nor are we making any investment recommendations. Please consult an investment advisor before you make any investments, and for goodness sake, do your due diligence and do not make investments without complying with the regulations in your home state. Exchange Invest cannot be held responsible for any investment decisions made as a result of our program, which is for entertainment purposes only. The material herein is copyright Patrick L. Young at the date of publication, while our music and sound effects are sourced from copyright-free sources. Thanks for listening to Exchange Invest Weekly, the exchange of information.